Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. What is our topic tonight? Listeners' tax questions again. So last week we took listeners' tax questions and we're opening up the phones for that again this evening. And in between, I will review the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 and some of the takeaways from that, which has certainly impacted tax filing season, and we have an announcement about that as well. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls. We take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Let me start with the big announcement from James Johnson brought this in to us from CNN. The Internal Revenue Service plans to delay this year's tax filing deadline by roughly a month to mid-May, according to an official familiar with the plans. The official said the decision was made in order to allow filers more time to navigate tax situations complicated by the coronavirus pandemic. There has been growing bipartisan support to extend the deadline. Lawmakers led by Democratic Representatives Jamie Raskin of Maryland and Bill Pascrell of New Jersey and Republican Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho had urged the move, citing the pandemic. Last year, the IRS moved the deadline to July 15th, giving Americans an additional 3 months to file their taxes. Let me tell you, as a firm and person who prepares tax returns, we'll take what we can get. And we're desperate to get this extended tax filing deadline. And as Lori and I were walking in this evening, she said, well, tell me what that means. Is it an extension of time to file? Is it an extension of time to pay? Basically, how you can think about it is May 17th has become the new April 15th. Everything will remain the same like that. So normally, your first quarter estimated payment and your tax payments would be due April 15th. I'm assuming they're going to let us do the first quarter payment as May 15th as well. And it's really May 17th because I believe May 15th must be on a Saturday and May 17th is on a Monday. So the new due date will be May 17th, and I assume that's also for the first quarter payment and for any balances due. So that does give us an extra month. Just a little behind the scenes glance, folks, so you understand what's going on with preparers and take a little sympathy on us, is when we are looking at your 2020 tax return, there have been a number of changes under the American Rescue Plan, which I will get into. But one of the biggest things that is also slowing down the preparation of the return is, number one, many offices are still remote. We have remote workers because not everyone has been vaccinated. Not all the clients have been vaccinated. So, firms had to pivot. in working with clients and tax preparation, while we have done electronic filing for years and years and have worked on computers for years and years, we still have clients who don't use computers for their electronic delivery of their documents. They still might want to deliver paper documents or want a paper copy of their tax return. And that all has to be organized and planned for drop-offs when there are, you know, there is still a pandemic and a chance for infection. So as we navigate that, that takes a little extra time, more time. When people are working in a remote environment, it's, you know, maybe more efficient sometimes in working. There still could be some inefficiencies in, again, the timing of the delivery of documents and kind of working with a multitude of people who might be part of the system, you know, intake of the documents, organizing of the documents, preparation of the tax return, and then the ultimate delivery of that and processing of that tax return. But what really also is going on is many people received a stimulus payment, recall, last, what was it, April, May, could have even been later, June, July. Stimulus payments is part of the CARES Act. And that stimulus payment, the first one was $1,200. And if you were married, filing joint, it would be another $1,200. So that was $2,400 if you were within certain income limitations. And if you had not already filed your 2019 return, they could base it on 2018. If you had already filed your 2019, they may have based it on that income level. Well, that was kind of like an advance payment. And we did a lot of planning for clients for their 2020 tax return because those stimulus payments based on 18 and 19 really were going to come to like a reconciliation for the 2020 filing. When we were aware of all of this, then we were doing a lot of planning for 2020. And what happens at the end of 2020, they did another stimulus payment right at the end and paid it out in January. Now, when we go to file your 2020 tax returns, we need to know what stimulus payment you got. Well, a lot of people don't remember, or they think they got it. Maybe they didn't get it. Some people got the first one, didn't get the second one, and they might have gotten the first one because it might have been based on 18, but then maybe they got their 19 return filed and then they didn't qualify for it. But then guess what? When we do your 2020 return, you might qualify for it. There is a lot of, confusion around these stimulus payments, and it is adding a lot of, time to kind of sort through it sometimes. No fault of anybody's. I'm just kind of explaining some of the frustration that tax preparers have faced with trying to reconcile the stimulus payments that people may have received on the first round, then on the second round, and then, as I say, the third bite of the apple, preparing the 2020 return. And for some people whose 2020 return had not been filed yet, the third round of stimulus could still be based on your 2019 income. And you may or may not have qualified for it based on that. Well, the third round, I'm still kind of a little confused if the IRS is going to give us like a window for the 2020 filings and continue to pay out the third round, or if the line was drawn in the sand the day they announced this. Half of the stimulus payments that people are supposed to be getting have been delivered. Half already have been delivered. It's incredible. That's for the third round. But that, they are considering, is an advance for 2021. So we'll go through this reconciliation again in 2021. But if you did end up receiving even the third payment and you technically wouldn't be eligible for it based on 2021 income, again, they're not going to make you pay that back. So no one's having to pay back the advanced stimulus payments. But you're certainly getting a chance at the extra one. the first and second one on your 2020 return, and you will have another chance to get the third round on your 2021 return if for some reason you don't get it in this latest push. Lots of information in the first 10 minutes of the show. Folks, if you have questions, the topic is listeners' questions again. That's what we did last week, and we're going to follow up with some this week. When we come back, I'm going to talk more about the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and it may be tax deductible. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me. And if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori C. She will write it down and bring it in. And we love questions, so if you have any, don't be shy. Let me piggyback what I was just talking about on the stimulus payments as part of this American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. So the first two stimulus payments, economic income payments, stimulus payments, recovery rebates, all were part of the CARES Act, the first one and the second one. And the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 took it a little further. So let me read that. This is from Walters Kluwer, and it was their tax briefing special report of March 10, 2021, talking about the recovery rebates. The bill includes a third round of direct stimulus payments for taxpayers. The Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Secures Act, that's the CARES Act, signed into law in March of 2020, included the first round, which I mentioned before, with $1,200 for individuals and $500 for the qualifying children. In December of 2020, the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021 provided an additional $600 stimulus payment for taxpayers and children. At the time of the second payment, many lawmakers, as well as former President Trump and then President-elect Biden, stated that the amount should be increased to $2,000. The American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 provides a $1,400 stimulus payment. So that kind of, you know, went back to the $2,000. So in December, paid out mostly in January, that was the $600. So this latest round, $1,400, that kind of refers back to the $2,000 that they were hoping to get out to folks. So the payments are essentially credits, though. This is a little bit different. This $1,400 is a little bit different than those first two. The payments are essentially credits against 2021 taxes, but fully refundable and payable in advance, similar to the prior payments. Like previous stimulus payments, this third round is subject to income limitations. Now, I want to go back for a moment. The first two we talked about, the $1,200 per person, subject to income limitations, and the $500 for qualifying children, that was sent out in 2020. And on your tax return for 2020, if you did not get it or only got a partial because your income was too high based on 2018 or 2019, if your income is lower in 2020, you can apply for the balance of those credits by preparing a recovery rebate credit worksheet. And then you report any remaining amount that you really would be entitled to based on your 2020 income. You report that amount on page 2 of your tax return, and it's refundable or will offset other taxes that you owe. That is different than this third round. So the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, providing the $1,400 stimulus payments. I mentioned their credits against 2021 taxes, but they're going out now. Half of them have already been paid. They're fully refundable, payable in advance. Under the Senate-passed version of the bill, however, a little different than what we had on those first two payments, the amount of the payment phases out ratably for single filers with adjusted gross income over $75,000 and $112,500 for heads of household and $150,000 for joint filers. The stimulus amount phases down to zero for single filers with $80,000. So for single filers, it's $75,000 to $80,000. And I think before it was 75 to 100, the phase out for single people. Married or head of households, 112.5 phases out at 120. Married filing joint starts at 150. Anything under 150, married filing joint, you'll get in full. Between 150 and 160, it phases out. Over 160, you're not entitled to this third one. And if it was for the prior two stimulus payments for married filing joint, 150 to 200, I believe, for the phase out. So the phase out is much, much narrower, lower income. And, you know, frankly, I heard a lot of people saying, you know, I don't need this. And so I think, you know, the politicians heard that and, you know, said, hey, maybe people aren't hurting as much. Let's get the money to the people who are hurting the most. And some of the people with higher income, we're going to kind of lower the threshold. Now, you might be entitled to that and receive it based on your 2019 or 2020 income. And you might say to yourself, but in 2021, I know I'm going to make a whole, you know, lot of money, a lot more money. Well, that's when you're going to do that reconciliation. And just like these that you just received in 2020, you don't have to pay them back if you got them and then your 2020 income was too high to receive them. You don't have to pay them back. All right. Adjusted gross income amounts for the 2020 tax year are used in applying the phase out, but 2019 amounts will be used in lieu of 2020 amounts for taxpayers who have not yet filed 2020 returns. As was the case with the last two stimulus payments, amounts to which taxpayers would have been entitled but did not receive will be creditable when preparing 2021 tax returns when we do that next year in 2022. Also, amounts received based on 2019 or 2020 returns that would have been lower when 2021 returns are prepared do not have to be repaid. So that's good news. The $1,400 is available for all persons for whom a Social Security number is associated and is $1,400 for taxpayers, children, and non-child dependents. The Treasury and IRS are granted authority to provide payments to non-filers based on available information. All right. That is a little different. $1,400 for taxpayers, children, and non-child dependents. Again, subject to the income limits. So if I have an adult, you know, child dependent, if my income is too high, they're not going to get that $1,400. But if, you know, I'm below the income limits, then my non-child dependent or my children would qualify. You know, read the specifics on that if you're interested. So as far as this American Rescue Plan that was passed on March 10th, 2021, and we've gone over the stimulus payments. There were also some changes for the child tax credit, but only for the 2021 tax year. But that might be important to know. And I'm going to talk about a little bit more about that and some dependent care assistance. Unemployment relief. This is something that has also, when we talk about what is slowing down preparers and accounting firms and tax filers, there was a change for the unemployment and the taxation of it, and we have not yet even heard how to report this and how to reflect it on the tax return. The IRS is supposed to be working with software providers, and our systems have not been updated yet, so then we have to hold tax returns. Folks, I will give you more updates on the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 when we come back from this next break. But also tonight's topic, listeners' tax questions. So if you have any questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. You can listen live on air at WDIY.org, and podcasts of prior shows are also available there under Public Affairs. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're taking listeners' questions, and you can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Lori, and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. The big news tonight, well, other than St. Patrick's Day for some of you who go a little crazy with this, other than that, the big news is the IRS is extending the filing date for tax season this year from April 15th to what would ordinarily be May 15th, but because it lands on the weekend, the due date will be May 17th. We expect that is going to be the due date for first quarter estimates and your tax payments and everything. It's just shoving it 1 month forward. And hopefully that'll give everybody a little bit of breathing room and give our software providers time to update the software to reflect some of the changes that they have enacted under the American Rescue Plan. Now, one thing that was changed in that plan was the child tax credit, and it is impactful for 2021. But the reason I want to talk about it and mention it tonight is because you could still benefit from it in 2021 before filing your tax return. Normally, we get the child tax credit on our tax return, but here's something. The bill includes a significant overhaul of the child tax credit, but only for the 2021 tax year, as I said. So why am I talking about it? Well, you'll hear in a minute. Under current law, the amount of the child tax credit is equal to $2,000 per child, but only $1,400 of that amount is refundable, meaning that the taxpayer receives the credit even if there is an insufficient amount of taxes to be credited against. So quite often, tax credits will offset tax, but if to the extent it exceeds the tax, they're not always refundable. So in this case, they're saying the child tax credit, which is normally $2,000 per child, only $1,400 of it was refundable. Now, the bill increases the amount to $3,000 per child or $3,600 for a child under the age of six. So they're increasing it quite a bit for 2021 and makes the credit amount fully refundable. The bill also increases the maximum age of qualifying children to include 17-year-old children. That is big. So it will increase the maximum age of qualifying children for the child tax credit to include 17-year-old children. Usually it was under 17, I believe. The excess of the amount of the credit over the present law 2000 amount is phased out by $50 for every 1000 of, you know, there's all kinds of limitations, all right? So it's going to be too complicated to talk about that. But there are some limitations and thresholds and things like that. So if you make too much money, it might phase out those the excess amount over 2000. So right now, if the joint filers are is the threshold is 400,000 for the $2,000. And for other filers, it's $200,000. So a couple years ago, they raised that. That's really high thresholds for that child tax credit of $2,000. With increasing this for 2021, I think only for 2021, helping people still kind of come out of this, pandemic. For 2021, they're raising it, but those thresholds are going to be a lot lower for the extra child tax credit. All right. The Treasury and IRS are directed by the bill to issue advanced payments of half of the credit amount beginning on July 1, 2021. That's why I wanted to mention this. The Treasury and IRS are directed to issue advanced payments of half of the credit amount beginning on July 1. The advanced payments are to be issued periodically in equal amounts through the end of 2021. The remaining half of the credit not paid in advance is received when filing your 2021 tax return, as the full amount is claimed on the return but reduced by the aggregate amount received in advance. All right. In the case of a taxpayer who received advance payments in error, for example, where a 2019 or 2020 return indicated a dependent child who is no longer a dependent in 2021, the bill provides a safe harbor provision protecting taxpayers from having to pay back overpayments of up to $2,000 per child. And the safe harbor is available for single taxpayers with modified adjusted gross income of $80,000 or less, $120,000 for joint filers, and $100,000 for head of household. Now, if you're above those thresholds, then they're not going to give you that safe harbor, and you probably would have to pay it back. The IRS and Treasury are directed to create a website for taxpayers to opt out of receiving advance payments or to provide information on status changes that would impact the amount of the credit. All right. Lots of information. If you're someone who, is eligible for a child tax credit, there is a chance you're going to start getting some advance payments in July and you're not going to know why. And this is why. And if you think in 2021 your income is going to be too high to actually receive it, then hopefully the IRS will by that time have an update on their website for people to opt out of it so that you don't, take the money, spend it, and then when you go to file your 2021 tax return, all of a sudden, you owe tons of money for this advanced credit that you're getting. There are some updates to the earned income tax credit. There are some updates for dependent care assistance. A bigger one that I want to make sure that I talk about is the unemployment relief as well. Let me see. For the earned income tax credit, it includes enhancements. And under the bill for 2021, the amount of the credit is significantly increased for filers without children. The changes caused the childless earned income tax credit amount for 2021 to increase from $543 to $1,502. And the amount of income at which the credit is maximized to $9,820. It's very complicated getting into all these numbers. So just know that the earned income tax credit will be enhanced under the bill for 2021 only. The bill also allows taxpayers to substitute 2019 earned income for 2021 earned income in claiming the earned income tax credit on 2021 returns if 2021 earned income was less than the 2019 earned income. All right, because that could impact the amount of the credit. And the dependent care assistance, the amount of the child and dependent care credit is significantly enhanced under the bill for 2021 only. Under current law, the amount of the credit is equal to 35% of qualified expenses for care of a qualifying child, up to $3,000 for one qualifying individual or $6,000 for two or more qualifying individuals. However, the credit percentage is reduced by 1 point for every $2,000 of adjusted gross income in excess of $15,000 until reaching 20%, at which point is no longer reduced. So the bill increases the credit to 50% of qualified expenses and reduces the credit percentage by 1 point for each $2,000 of adjusted gross income in excess of $125,000. Again, some of this gets a little bit too complicated to, really emphasize on the radio. So just know that there are going to be some changes to the dependent care assistance as well. And for folks who will have dependent care in 2021, there could be some relief for you. When we come back from this next break, we'll talk about the unemployment relief. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good afternoon, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shondi Gray. It is now 6:30 and 43 with clear skies. Tonight is going to be low around 39. Thursday, we're going to have rain and high 50. Thursday night is going to be low around 34. And for your Friday, you have a slight chance of rain, high 42. Friday night is going to be low 25. And for Saturday, sunny, high 50. And Saturday night, low 28. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shondi. Welcome back, folks. If you have questions this evening, the topic is listeners' tax questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your information or your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. So the last thing I think I'm going to cover from the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021 is the unemployment relief. I will just mention that there were other things in there as well, some exclusion of forgiven student loans and some employer tax relief for paid sick and family leave credits, some COBRA coverage assistance, funding for retirement plans by employers. So there were a number of other provisions in the act as well. Premium tax credits, that's for people who are on the marketplace buying insurance. There's something for premium tax credits, not having to pay some of those back. So that there's a lot of relief there. And so I think I'm going to focus on the unemployment relief as well. We did get a call off air from Amy in Allentown. Amy, thank you for calling in. You're the brave soul, the first one to call tonight. So thank you for your question. And Amy asked, any part of nursing home care tax deductible? Amy, it could be. And nursing home is, as long as it's qualified care, so nursing home, we usually typically say that is qualified care. Someone can't perform three activities of daily living. It could be, transferring, toileting, eating, walking, three activities of daily dressing. Three activities of daily living usually will qualify for as a medical expense. It doesn't always have to just be a nursing home. It could be assisted living as well. So when we add up the cost of the nursing home, it can't include things like, getting their hair done or TV, but we know that the cost of nursing homes really can add up quite a bit. And if you have long-term care insurance that also helps subsidize that, it would be the net amount. If you pay $100,000 in nursing home care, and you might say, oh my gosh, but yes, it can be as high as that, if not higher, in the Lehigh Valley. If you're paying $100,000 and you have long-term care that totally reimburses those qualified expenses, then we're not going to take a deduction for that. You pay out $100,000, you get $100,000, no deduction. But sometimes there's elimination periods, might be 90 days, 120 days. If you're paying out of pocket for 90 days, that's 3 months, and it ends up being $30,000, there is a chance that when you add that to some of the other medical expenses, you would still maybe be able to itemize. So when we talk about is nursing home care tax deductible, it depends on how much it is and if the taxpayer is going to itemize deductions on Schedule A. The issue that we have with medical expenses is it's limited, meaning not all of it's allowed. We have to look at 7.5% of the page one income. So if the page one income is $100,000, 7.5% of that is $7,500. And if your nursing home care is $100,000, then it would be $100,000 less that limitation of $7,500. That could be a really big deduction. And when you add to the nursing home care, the cost of Medicare, maybe Part B, Part D, prescription coverage, supplemental insurance, maybe hearing aids, equipment, walker, wheelchair, doctors, copays, prescriptions. When you add all that up, it could really add up to be quite a bit. And then you would itemize the deductions, because if the itemized deductions on Schedule A are more than the standard deduction for someone, then you can itemize. Now, Amy, what happens sometimes when people have really high nursing home expenses, it may completely wipe out their income because the expenses could be that high. That's where you want to look at tax planning, because let's say this is mom or grandmom or a favorite aunt, and maybe they have retirement monies like IRAs. You might want to take a little extra money out of those accounts if you're going to wipe it out in tax, or convert IRA monies to Roth. The issue you have to watch out there is it's like a circular calculation. The more income you put on page one of the return, the more your medical expenses will be limited. But it's definitely something to look at, especially if you're working with someone who has taxable income, who has nursing home expenses, because they get very high very fast. So very good question. Nursing home care expenses can be tax deductible if they exceed the 7.5% limitation added with all the other medical expenses the taxpayer has. And then with that, any charitable contributions or real estate taxes or mortgage interest they might have, add that all together. And if the amounts are over the standard deduction, it would and could be worth itemizing. All right. I hope that helps. And now, if mom or aunt or grandma, if they don't have any taxable income, there may be no need to go through all of that effort. So make sure you know what kind of income you're reporting on the tax return. Amy, I hope that helps. I try to give a little extra information besides just answering the question, especially when people are calling off air, because quite often I know for myself when I ask a question, I will have another question and another question. So I hope I was able to kind of cover all those extra questions for you. And that is for federal purposes. Now, we know in Pennsylvania we don't have deductions like that for Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania only gives us a few deductions for contributions to a health savings account outside of the, you know, doing it through payroll deduction, or contributions to college savings 529 plans. We get deductions for that as well. No medical deductions on Pennsylvania, but New Jersey also has a deduction for medical expenses. And there's a limitation as well there, but I think a lot of people forget about that for New Jersey. And if you have taxable income for New Jersey, make sure you're looking at what your medical expenses are, because it gets complicated when, especially if you're working and you have a W-2 and you have to kind of reconcile your pay stub to your W-2 to see which medical deductions on your W-2 are included in your New Jersey income, because New Jersey knows they give this medical deduction. So New Jersey income is not calculated the same way as other states' income or federal income. You really have to tie into the pay stub to see if you're going to be eligible for some medical deductions on your New Jersey return. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about listeners' tax questions and also talking about the American Rescue Plan. Let me talk a bit about the unemployment relief. So one of the questions, and I think I alluded to this last week because we also did listeners' tax questions last week, and that was people thinking that they don't need to report the unemployment compensation because they've already paid taxes on it. I don't know where these ideas come from, but apparently it's been a real, story this year with a lot of people who think, well, I got unemployment and I paid my 10% withholdings on my unemployment and it's taxes taken care of. You know, a long, long time ago, unemployment wasn't taxable. like a long time ago, but it's been taxable for federal purposes for a very, very long time. Now it's not taxable for Pennsylvania purposes. I think off the top of my head, I'm not sure it is for New Jersey either, but definitely not taxable for Pennsylvania, but normally taxable for federal. And a lot of people could opt in to have 10% withholding on their unemployment insurance, but you most definitely have to report that on your tax return, the gross amount, and normally it's all taxable, but under the American Rescue Plan, we are going to get some reprieve, which I will tell you about in a minute. I first want to make sure that people understand they need to report the amount that is reflected on their 1099-G, means government payment. 1099-G reflects your unemployment compensation. And if you chose to have withholdings, it's federal withholdings, 10%. You want to make sure you get that on your tax return. Now, the American Rescue Plan, the unemployment relief, again, this is a report, a tax briefing from Walters Kluwer. The unemployment relief, the bill includes an extension of enhanced $300 weekly unemployment relief, first made available in the early pandemic relief bills. The extension, originally set to expire in March, would run through early September under the bill, but with some changes. The notable change for tax purposes makes the first $10,200 of unemployment relief received in 2020 exempt from tax for households with up to $150,000 of income. So they're extending the $300 weekly unemployment relief. That's in 2021. But the big relief during tax season, while we're filing 2020 tax returns, some tax returns which have already been filed reporting all of the unemployment compensation, we have a rule change. Doesn't happen often, right in the middle of tax season, right in the middle of returns that have already been filed. There's been a tax change. So for 2020, if you are someone who received unemployment compensation and prior to this act filed your return and reported your unemployment compensation as all income taxable, you will have to make a change. But the IRS is asking you to wait. They are saying, wait a minute, for people who already filed your return, we're going to give you a worksheet. We're going to work through this, so just hang on. As far as I know, they haven't completed that yet. They'll make some change for you. We all thought we were going to have to file amended returns. I'm wondering myself if they actually will find a way to correct that themselves, if they'll be able to figure it out at some point and kind of go back and take care of it. But what we're being told is they're going to have you do like some kind of a worksheet for people who are already filed. For the people who have not already filed, if you received, and there's a caveat to all of this, by the way, too. If you have not already filed, we report the gross amount of your unemployment compensation. And if your income, households with income under $150,000 or up to $150,000, we can exclude $10,200. So if you're over $150,000, you're out of luck. It's going to be all taxable. It's no phase out. It's like a line drawn in the sand. The unemployment will be all taxable if you're over the $150,000. If you're under the $150,000, we have to exclude $10,200 of your unemployment compensation. We just don't know how we're going to do it yet. So I thought maybe we could just, you know, put in $10,200 less. But the IRS is telling us that they will work with software providers to do the calculation. So we are waiting for our software to update to put that return through properly so that you get the exclusion of $10,200. And that's per person. So if two of you were unemployed and your income is under $150,000, you'll be able to exclude $10,200 each. I'm not exactly sure how they came up with that very odd amount, but I'm sure it's explained somewhere. But $10,200 of unemployment relief, again, if it was received in 2020, will be an adjustment on your tax return for households with up to $150,000 of income. And we have to wait for the IRS to let us know how to handle it for people who have already filed and wait for our software providers to update it to process returns that we have been holding. All right, folks, we are in the last 15 minutes of the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
It's that time of year again. Celebrate WDIY's 26th anniversary with our virtual party online Saturday, March 20th from 7 to 8 p.m. Hosted by John Dodds and featuring the Lehigh Valley's best musical performers such as Steve Broski and Pentley Holmes. You'll also hear from WDIY staff, members, and a few special guests. For more information and virtual passes to the socially distanced extravaganza, go to WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we have Carolyn from Sailorsburg on line one. Carolyn, hi. Can you hear me?
I can, Lori. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for calling.
Oh, sure. I'm just a little not clear on some other changes that happened, not recently, but I think just a little couple years ago or so. It's standard deductions versus itemized deductions.
Mm-hmm.
We do give a lot of money to causes that we believe in, and mm-hmm. we don't do it for the tax deduction, but we used to keep track of everything that we did, and
right.
we used to itemize. And now, what did they do? Did they raise the ceiling on that, and you have more of a standard deduction should cover that?
Yeah, what happened under the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, TCJA, they raised the standard deduction so high that a lot of people, when they added up their charitable contributions with their mortgage interest and their real estate taxes, they weren't over the standard deduction anymore, because not only did they raise the standard deduction really high, they lowered the amount we could use in itemizing. They lowered our deduction for what they call the SALT deduction, which is state and local taxes. They limited that to $10,000. So then when people were limited to $10,000 and then they added their mortgage interest and then maybe their charitable giving, if they're married filing joint, and when this first came out, it was, I think the standard deduction was like $24,000 for married filing joint. Well, a lot of people, if the SALT deduction, state and local tax deduction, was limited to $10,000, that would mean their other deductions would have to be more than $14,000. Well, a lot of people are charitably inclined, but they might not be giving $14,000 away, or, you know, if they didn't have mortgage interest. So we saw a lot of people no longer itemizing. They were taking the standard deduction. But I'm glad you asked this question, because in 2020, the CARES Act is also just for 1 year, for 2020, allowing people to take what we call an above-the-line deduction, meaning you could still do the standard deduction, but they're letting us take a deduction for $300 of monetary donations. So while ordinarily with the higher standard deduction, you're not itemizing anymore, we also weren't getting any kind of deduction for the charitable, now for 2020, you get $300. It's not a huge deduction by any means, but it is something. And, you know, so we're encouraging people to make sure they tell us if they've done at least $300 of monetary donations. But this tax is going to sunset in 2026. So it could be, Carolyn, in 2026, we go back to the old itemizing. And we may be, again, in a situation where we're going to start itemizing our deductions again, because the standard deduction will be lower. Unless, you know, laws change, which they do frequently. So they could extend what we're doing now. We don't know.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Carolyn. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. We also had Steve from Bethlehem call off air. He said he missed the blurb at the beginning regarding the new due date and how it will impact payment. Thank you, Steve, for mentioning that, because I probably should have been mentioning this periodically through the show, because it is news and we're very excited to learn that the Internal Revenue Service plans to delay this year's tax filing deadline by roughly a month to mid-May. And this was according to an official familiar with the plans. This is CNN. Now, everyone's been broadcasting this, the PICPA, the Bloomberg, everybody, but it was all like hearsay. But by now, I mean, I've been on air. They probably have made it official. And the IRS is moving the tax deadline from April 15th to May 15th. But May 15th is on a weekend. So it whenever the 15th falls on a weekend, it falls to the next Monday, so it'll be May 17th. And I expect what that means then, Steve, is that April 15th just kind of moves to this May 17th, and all the same rules will apply. So if ordinarily our returns would be due April 15th, our first quarter estimates due April 15th, our payments due April 15th, it is, oh, and Lori just brought it in. It is official. It is on the IRS's website. Tax day for individuals extended to May 17th. The Treasury, IRS extend filing and payment deadline. So it is official. Thank you, Lori C. It is official. So the payments won't be due till May 15th either. So for people who owe, you know, usually they're writing the check on April 15th. You can wait until May 17th. And another note, Steve, that this brings up that people may not be aware of, if you're electronically filing, and quite often for refunds, we, you know, highly recommend direct deposit. Fastest way to get your money, direct deposit for refunds. Sometimes people aren't as comfortable with the IRS pulling money out of your account. And we always like to say, well, if you are going to direct debit out of your account, if you owe, we definitely want to make sure that you have money in the account. But you can file your tax return anytime, but tell the IRS to direct debit on the due date. You could say direct debit the money on May 15th. We just like to make sure our clients have the money in their account. We've had people tell us direct debit, and it's a month later, and you know they've moved their funds or closed that bank account, and that's not a good thing. So you can make your payments May 17th, and the first quarter estimate would be due then as well. You know, one thing, the IRS had been kind of reluctant, I believe, to extend the due date in this manner, in this format, because they said, oh, everybody can extend anyway. You all can file extensions to October 15th. But the problem there was for tax preparers to do an extension, the payment was still due. So if we just did an extension to October 15th and the payment would still due in April, well, guess what? We still have to basically do the tax return. It's almost still as much work as doing the tax return. And there's just been too many crazy things happening this tax season. So we really appreciate the extra time. It's going to make a big difference. And it gives us all, you know, a little breathing room to further figure out the stimulus payments that people were getting. And if they, you know, are entitled to more with the filing of their 2020 return. And I'll mention that again too, Steve. So that's a good idea. The recovery rebate credit. Folks, if you did not get the full stimulus payment on the first round or the second round, you have a third chance to get it in filing your 2020 tax return. If you did not get the full amount because maybe your income was too high based on 18 or 19, but your income's lower in 2020 and you think you're going to qualify for it now, there's a recovery rebate worksheet you can work through and request the amount that you would be entitled to on page 2 of your 2020 tax return. This third stimulus, we're not getting that on our 2020 tax return. They're sending those out now. Half of them have already been paid. And you'll reconcile that on your 2021 tax return. All right. Thank you, Steve, for asking me to repeat that. So I appreciate that. Let's let's talk about a tax question here. So Social Security, this was from last week. How Social Security is taxed along with how much you can earn before it is taxed and at what percentage. Now, there is a worksheet to calculate how much Social Security gets taxed. When someone starts collecting Social Security, it's taxable based on how much other income you have on your tax return. And there's like phase out ranges. But basically, if you're single and you make over $34,000 of this calculated income, which includes half of the Social Security and tax exempt income, if you're single and it's over $34,000, it's going to be 85% included. If you're married, filing joint with more than $44,000 of income, and again, this is this calculation based on the worksheet, then it would be 85% includable. And it goes down. If your income is less than that, it could be 50%. And if it's even less than that, like $25,000 for single and $32,000, I believe, for married, filing joint, then it might not be included at all. Social Security gets taxed, included in taxable income, based on how much other income you have on your tax return, but it's never more than 85%. All right, that's how Social Security gets taxed on your return. But the other question was, how much can you earn? I added another question to it. So it wasn't just how much you can earn. It's, I wanted to know if you're collecting Social Security and you're working. So if you want to continue working and collect Social Security, if you're under full retirement age, you may have to pay some back. That's what I thought was interesting, because a lot of people think that once they're on Social Security, you know, they can't work. And that's not true. If you're pre-full retirement age, and that is different depending on when you were born, but for 2021, if you're under full retirement age, you have to pay back $1 for every $2 over the annual limit. So you'd have to pay back some of your Social Security benefit. And it's $1 for every $2 over the limit. And the limit for 2021 is $18,960. Now, if you're in the year of full retirement, so in 2021, let's say you're going to be full retirement age, then they deduct $1 in benefits for every $3 you earn above the different limit. And in 2021, this limit on your earnings is $50,250. So you can make a lot of money in the year you're going to turn full retirement age and still collect Social Security. And once you reach full retirement age, you can make any amount of money that you want. So once you reach full retirement age, if you're collecting Social Security, you can make any amount you want. You don't have to pay any back. Now, generally, if you're still working, maybe think about, does it make sense to start collecting? What I have seen happen sometimes is people might lose a job and then they start collecting and then they go back to work. Well, if you do and you make way over those limits, then in essence, you're not going to be collecting Social Security. It almost kind of stops itself. But if you're only working part-time, you're doing a little of this, a little of that, you just want a little extra job to kind of supplement the Social Security, you just have to be aware of not making over those amounts or you'll have to start paying some of it back. So I hope that makes sense. We had another question. It actually kind of came up in two different situations. What happens when my adult child sells their home for a gain within the exclusion limits of a primary residence, but the parents are also listed as a joint owner with rights of survivorship, but they've never lived there. They just kind of did it. The kid probably thought it was a good idea. Kid bought the house. Kid paves for the house. Parents just have to be on the deed. A real estate attorney had suggested if it's solely the tax consequences, the seller should discuss with their accountants the allocation of their proceeds. On the bottom of page 3 of the 1099-S instructions titled Multiple Transferors, the sellers or transferors can dictate what percentage each seller should be allocated in reporting to the IRS. Most closing agents don't know this, so it may need to be discussed in advance and you actually show them the rules and therefore the parents get zero and the daughter gets 100% and can be deemed the only sellers per IRS regs and instructions. So I thought that was a great tip and a great question. And it does come up, so very important. I want to thank our listeners for calling in with the questions. You were fantastic. Lori C., thank you so much for being here. And Shondi, thank you for being here as well. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.